What's up, Noel Nation? It's the guys from Plant the Spear back with another episode for you guys. We are here to preview Florida State's spring practice session that is getting ready to start on Tuesday of next week, the 19th. And there's a lot of interesting topics that we're watching in this one, Michael. We got a few things we've kind of diluted down to the three main things that we're watching through spring. This is going to be our first chance to get a look at this 2024 roster in pads, out in practice type scenarios. We've got to see them in tour of duty. We've got to see how they look physically, but now it's time to see how they look on a football field. And there's a lot of new faces. There's a lot of pieces coming back that we like, but there's a lot of new faces that we have to get up to speed on. You know, 2023, there wasn't a whole lot of guesswork. 2024, there's a lot of big changes. So there's a lot of exciting things. I think that's what makes this spring session makes it more crucial, more exciting, more interesting to watch as we try and read the tea leaves that come out of practice and before, obviously, all leading up to the spring game on April 20th. So I'm really excited to get in this episode. I think you guys are going to enjoy it because there's a lot of interesting topics that we have to talk about here. So before we get into that, Michael, thank you so much for joining me today, my friend. How are you doing?
Well, thanks for having me again, Jesse. Yeah, I mean, we're all excited for spring this year. And you know, last year going into the spring practices and spring football game, we kind of knew what we had because we had so many returning starters, both offense and defense. And so you kind of knew what we had. You were just trying to see what pieces that Mike Norvell and the staff were going to be able to implement to kind of help grow the opportunity for Florida State to be a more dominant team in 2023, which we saw by going 13-0. This year, while we have some returning pieces, a lot of the core pieces are new or transfer. And so we don't have an idea of what this team is going to look like or how the offense is going to be shaped around, you know, potentially DJU if he wins out, which we're all expecting him to, or how those wide receiver core is going to look. And then obviously on the backside of the defense, who's taking the other safety spots. We're going to get into all of that today. So it's a fascinating spring.
Exactly. And I think when you listen to what you said, I think you make a good point. I think this year is kind of like coming into 2022.
Yeah.
You knew you brought in a lot of pieces that had potential. You just needed to see what they were going to turn out to be. And so I think this is kind of more along that vein where you don't really know what you got. You just like the pieces. And you got to see how it plays out on the field. So what we're going to talk about today is, can Mike Norvell and Tony Tokars unlock DJU? And I got some interesting numbers for you there. I think you're going to be excited about some of these numbers that we're going to talk about. The next topic we'll get into is players living up to potential, the portal hit rate, and the young guys that need to step up. And then we'll talk about the five position group battles that we are most closely watching in this spring. Yes. So to start with, we're going to start with the most important position on the field, and that's at quarterback. Now, of course, it is a battle. Right. I'm not going to take Brock Glenn out of the picture. I mean, the guys, he's talented. He got to play a little bit last year. He's not just going to concede the position. No. I mean, it's if you think about it, he started the last two games, so it's his to lose. So he's going to put up a fight. But assuming, most of us assume, that DJU is going to be the starter. Mm-hmm. Now, really, when you talk about DJU, and this has kind of been some of the things that the national talking heads have talked about and some of the other fan bases and whatnot, is DJU, to be honest, I have to be honest here. We like DJU. He's who I wanted out of the portal. I think he's a guy that can really elevate. You know, he comes in with 40 Power 5 starts. He's won, I think, 30 and 10 in those 40 games. He's a proven winner. Now, he also had a extremely high star rating coming out of high school. I think he was like literally one of the top 200, 250 prospects ever to be ranked by 247. So the potential has been there, but there's been some argument that he's really hasn't lived up to that potential.
Yeah.
And so this segment, we're going to talk about, can Mike Norvell and Tony Tokars unlock DJU's potential? Because it's in there. Now, the reason I say he hasn't quite lived up to that potential is looking back at his numbers. So in 2023, he threw at Oregon State, of course. He threw for 2,638 yards, had a kind of subpar completion percentage of 57.1%. Got to get a little bit better there.
Yeah.
In 2022 at Clemson, he threw for 2,521 yards, 6.8 yards per attempt, 61.9% completion percentage. So a little better there. But there's some things at Clemson that we talk about where that wide receiver core wasn't the best. It's kind of been their Achilles heel the last few years. We know DJ left, and then the passing offense didn't really get a whole lot better. So we have pretty much talked about before on the show that we don't feel DJU was the problem at Clemson. Maybe Clemson was the problem for DJU. Then he goes to Oregon State. He has a better year by percentage reasons. His completion percentage was off a little bit. That's got to improve. And we're going to talk about that in a second. But he also really didn't have a whole lot of talent around him. Now, that's going to take a big step up at Florida State. So this is really, I mean, you're looking at your final year of college football on the most talented roster as far as receiving core that you have to work with that you've had throughout your career. And the reason why we titled this as Can Mike Norvell and Tony Tokars Unlock DJU is you have to look back at Mike Norvell's history with quarterbacks. And it's quite impressive. Now,
very impressive.
We talked about how DJU was one of the best and highest rated quarterbacks coming out of high school. Mike Norvell has done insane things with guys who weren't the most highest rated guys coming out of high school. And so just to look back at the starting quarterbacks that he has had since his time as a offensive coordinator, sole offensive coordinator, which began at Arizona State, or coach, Memphis and Florida State, there's some pretty impressive numbers here. And I had just took some notes to kind of sum it all up for you. So in 12 years as an offensive coordinator or head coach, only two seasons. Now, one of these we're going to have to put an asterisk by 2020 because they didn't play a full season. So
that's
it's hard
right.
to put up the same numbers. So only two seasons out of 12 did his starting quarterback fail to produce 3,000 yards passing. That was 2020 FSU, only played nine games. And 2021 FSU, where they used multiple quarterbacks. That was the shuffle year. They kind of had a bunch of different guys who were trying to figure things out. Only two quarterbacks have had a sub 60% completion percentage. Only one season since becoming a head coach has a starting quarterback not thrown for over 8 yards per attempt, and that was Florida State in 2021, which was 7.9, so pretty darn close there. He's had two seasons where the quarterback threw for over 4,000 yards, and three out of five of the quarterbacks that he's had as his starters as a head coach has thrown, or excuse me, as an offensive coordinator head coach, has thrown for 30-plus touchdowns in a season. Oof. And the fourth one threw for 29, and I think the fifth one threw for 28. So it's been pretty crazy. So he has a history of producing with quarterbacks. The average from 2012 up to 2023, of course, throwing out 2020, they average 430 attempts on the season. Now, this is something also that I think is interesting. When you look back at how they threw the ball at Florida State, they really haven't thrown it as much as they did at Memphis. So I think he still wants to see this offense throw the ball a little bit more. I mean, you look at some of the quarterbacks here. You look at DJU last year, threw it 315 times at Oregon State. JT threw it 353 times in 2022. In 2023, he threw it 324 before he went out. So here's what, and let me just say this before we get into some numbers. This is what I did with Jordan Travis in 2023. Because he had already pretty much played 10 and a half games, I just used his averages to project what he would have done.
What he would have done,
If he played in the bowl game, he would have thrown it 412 times, roughly. So you see they're getting back to where he likes to throw the ball, around 400 times a season. Now, at Memphis, Brady White threw it 420 in 2019, 392 in 2018. Riley Ferguson threw it 474 times and 443 times. Goodness gracious, Michael. In 2015, Mike Bercovici at Arizona State threw it 531 times.
They were slinging that ball.
They were. And Taylor Kelly at Arizona State was 484 and 360. So you can see he likes to throw the ball 400-plus times a season. And DJU was only a 315 last year, 370 at Clemson. So I think you're going to see him throw the ball a little bit more. But I think the point of all these numbers is to just see what Mike Norvell has done with quarterbacks and where DJU is at. You can see the room for improvement. You can see where he could be. It would be surprising because remember last year we said he threw for 2,638 yards, 8.4 yards per attempt, 57.1% completion percentage, which is the yards per attempt is in line. But the yards you could see come up to above 3,000 yards. Now, of course, DJU didn't play in our bowl game. You know, he wouldn't have probably thrown for that many, but he'd have been close to 3,000. So you would expect him to get to above that 3,000 level. You would expect him to get that completion percentage bumped up to above 60% because, again, Mike Norvell quarterbacks typically throw for above 60%. And he only threw for 21 touchdowns last year, which isn't a bad number. Maybe he gets closer to that 30 mark, the benchmarks.
Yeah.
And the reason I think these numbers are significant, and then I'll kick it back to you, is early on when Mike Norvell came here, we saw the first 2 years started out pretty rough, and everybody was kind of scratching their head. Is this really, you know, we hadn't seen the offense that we brought in, the offensive guru yet.
Right.
And I told everybody, I said, you have to look back at the data from Memphis, from Arizona State, all these years, and look at the production that they've had, and the numbers will trend in that direction.
Right.
And then 2022, I mean, if you look at the comparison, it was just silly. I mean, they were within like 5% on almost every single number. So I believed the long-term data over the short-term struggle. And the numbers came back to where they were at. Right. So for a quarterback, you would think the numbers will trend back to that direction. We saw JT get better in year two as the full-time starter. We saw so I would expect DJU to kind of take that step and progress back towards what Mike Norvell has historically done with quarterbacks. And if he does that, I think you're going to be on par for a really good season.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, Mike Norvell specifically, and you know, you can add in Tony Tokeras from this past year. You could talk about, you know, Kenny Dillingham from before, but they've had a track record of helping these quarterbacks grow every single year. Now, yes, we're only going to get DJU for one season and that's it. But I think that in the progress of the season, you saw, let's just use Jordan Travis as an example. In 2021, when Jordan, you know, kind of started the game against Notre Dame, then wasn't, and then Milton in. Well, finally, when they finally said, okay, Jordan is the quarterback, right? You actually started to see when they went on that 5-3 run to end 2021, you actually started to see progress throughout the year of him getting better, his accuracy getting better, his deep ball getting better, his completion percentage getting better, his yards per attempt getting better, all those things. Of course, then in 2022, those things took an astronomical jump. And they got much better. Then in 2023, started out really hot, but then, you know, obviously the injuries piled up. So you see a continuous steady of progress with those quarterbacks. And I believe that they'll get a hold of DJU. They'll get him in the training. They'll watch film. They'll correct what they can correct. Now, the thing is, like you said, he's in his last year of college football. There's only so much you're going to be able to, quote unquote, fix of his delivery, his stance. But they'll find that. They'll find whatever the little tweaks that they need to make, and then they'll adjust that. And then the other side of this is, man, Mike Norvell has said this from the very beginning, that this offense is built for playmakers. And so they're going to tailor. I've never seen, maybe outside a few coaches in college football, who can adjust their offense to the dynamic of the players. Like a lot of coaches say that. They'll say, you know, oh, yeah, you know, we manipulate the offense and we cater around our players. But really, they're just running the same thing over and over. Mike Norvell will literally find whatever the strengths of his quarterback is, whatever his running backs, wide receivers, all of them, and that's what they'll go to. You know, and we talked about how, you know, he throws the ball. He wants to get back to throwing. You know, he leverages the run to set up the pass. And sometimes, like this year, last year in 2022, sorry, the year before that, they used the run to set up the pass. Then in this year, they had to use the pass to set up the run because teams were coming up and trying to stop the run all the time. I guarantee you, he'll get DJU in there if DJ's the starter, because we don't want to, like, just, you know, go ahead and just say Brock is not starting. But if DJU's the starter, he'll figure out what best way to put DJU in, whether that's run the pass or pass the run. And if it's pass the run, then you imagine that he'll begin working on those. I know we're going to get into some of DJU's issues, but some of those issues of accuracy and getting the ball down the field in that medium route tree there, so that he could get better, so that he'll put FSU in a better position on the offense.
Right. And I want to point out one important thing too, is to keep in mind with Jordan Travis, he didn't peak until fifth and sixth year. And, of course, he had COVID year. But, I mean, he thought about giving up playing quarterback, period. So the fact that DJU is a senior, this is his last year of college football, I think there's still some things that can be fixed there. I still think, you know, just when you look back at the history with Jordan Travis and how it took him so late in his career to peak, I also think at the same time, that's why DJU wanted to come here, because see the history. I mean, when you look at, you talk about built for playmakers, you almost don't play quarterback. Like, you can take it to the bank that a Mike Norvell quarterback is going to throw for 3,000 yards.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
just for the sake of conversation, the adjusted number that I got for Jordan Travis was around 3,257 yards if he had played the rest of the season. So, again, it's extremely rare for him to have a quarterback that doesn't throw for 3,000 yards, that doesn't throw for almost 30 touchdowns, that doesn't have that completion percentage above 60%. So if he can get DJU back to that, to meet those standards, he's going to have a good year. And you, like you said, you can adjust the offense. Look back to 2020. I mean, we were terrible. And they still ran for 199 yards a game because he knew he had Jordan Travis, a running quarterback. He knew they really didn't have much to as far as passing offense.
Right.
So he played to his strengths. And if you go back and look at Mike Norvell's offenses at Memphis and throughout the years, if they have ran the ball extremely successfully. He loves to run the ball.
Yes.
But I just think that you're going to see them, if DJU can live up to the billing, they're going to throw the ball more. And you also, you like what they put around him that I think should help too. I mean, when you look back at what he had at Oregon State, we talked about this in a previous episode where just the, and I know star ratings don't mean everything. We're probably the number one chief, you know, show for saying star ratings don't matter. But the star ratings between what Florida State has and what Oregon State has are pretty stark contrast. It's night and day. So what he's surrounded with, the pieces, the speed, the depth at receiver, is something that's really going to help unlock DJU. But I just think when you look at where he's been, again, a quarterback who had a sub 60% completion percentage last year, he hasn't thrown for 3,000 yet in his career, which is, you know, again, that's a bit of a head scratcher there when you talk about the level of talent.
Right.
I think he can get you to that level. Now, I think the other thing that's interesting too, the other aspect that I want to throw in here, is that he is a runner. He is a running quarterback. He ran the ball over 100 times at Clemson in 2022. And one reason I say that is because sometimes you might think, okay, well, if you have a scrambler, maybe he doesn't put up quite the yards.
Right.
That's not been the case with Mike Norvell. And this is why, in 2022, I did a comparison where I said, well, hang on, I think Jordan Travis is going to be, I think he's poised for a breakout season.
Okay.
And he did. And he because did. I went back and looked at the history. That's why you look back at the data. Numbers don't lie. And so Taylor Kelly was another mobile quarterback at Arizona State. He had almost similar rushing numbers to Jordan Travis.
Yeah.
From when I did the comparison the first time. Well, he threw for 3,040 yards, 66.9% completion percentage in his first year and as a starter. And in his second year as a starter, he threw for 3,635 yards and a 62.4% completion percentage. So you can be a mobile guy and also look at Jordan in 2022. I think he had like 500 yards rushing, still threw for 3,200 yards, 9.1 yards per attempt, 64% completion percentage. You can do both. And so I think you're going to see them use that running ability, like you said, to tailor the offense to the skill sets that they have. But I also think you're going to see a bump in his passing as well. And for the most part, like we talked about, we'll dive into some of the things with DJ now, is it's that mid-range accuracy that's got to improve. He's great at the deep ball. And we saw, we were kind of comparing some notes in the pre-show where he's gotten better year over year. And especially with the deep ball, he had, 43% on the deep ball last year, which is
last year
really good. His short-term passing has been fine. It's just that mid-range that has to improve.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because on the deep ball, he's, you know, 43% this year, but like his, you know, last year at Clemson or I'm sorry, first year that he was a full-time starter, it was somewhere around 30%. So you saw the growth there. But when you get into that 10 to 19 yards, he's at 58.1% completion percentage, but he's had interceptions in that miss. I can't remember what the exact number was, but I think he's thrown like four or five. Four interceptions to like eight touchdowns in that same time span. Now we want a comparison. Jordan, from that 10 yard to 19 yard, Jordan was 59.4%. So just a tad bit better. But the difference was, I believe, that Jordan only had 10 touchdowns and one interception.
Yeah.
So that's the difference. It's not just the accuracy. It's being inaccurate and putting the ball in harm's way, which we know Mike Norvell is dead serious on. They always saw protect the rock. The rock. That's what was so successful about Florida State last year, is that that team rarely turned the ball over. It was almost a shock when they had a turnover. You're like, you know, I was there at the Orange Bowl game, and I know it's not a game we want to talk about, and I don't even count it, but when they were turning the ball, I was like, oh my gosh, like what is going on here? Because it was rare to turn the ball over. So Mike Norvell puts a key emphasis on that. And so DJU, you know, if he's going to grow as a quarterback, especially in his last year, he's going to have to find a way to, one, get the accuracy of that medium range of that 10 to 19 yards up. You know, you want that somewhere around 60 to 65%, right? Because that is a little bit harder. You're trying to get the ball over the linebacker into that soft coverage there. So so it is a little bit harder too, but you want to get that in that 60 range. And you want to make sure that if you're going to miss where there are no defenders at. Miss in the middle where you're going to just drop it in there. Or because you just do not want to turn the ball over in the middle of the field. That's the worst space to turn that ball over in.
Yeah, and Jordan Travis is one of the most efficient quarterbacks that I've seen in 2023. But and looking at some quarterbacks, the better quarterbacks through the numbers, like you mentioned, you kind of want your short to be around the 80 to 90 range. Yeah. Your mid-range around that 60% is good, and your deep ball at 40% plus is exceptional.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we've seen he has the deep ball. It's just cleaning up that middle of the that 10 to 19 yards, like you mentioned. And so I think they're going to be able to do that. Obviously, you have a ton of talent at wide receiver.
That's
Again, keep in mind, this is something that we talked about on a previous show that sounds extremely counterintuitive when you think that the passing offense could get better lose Johnny Wilson, Keon Coleman, and Jaheim Bell. But I have to remind you about the Pitt game you didn't have two of those three guys, your top two receivers, and Jordan just went out and threw for the most yards that he'd thrown for all season. So I just think with the amount of targets that you have to work with, you know, they can work on the footwork, on his release, get a little bit quicker, a little snappier.
Right.
He's already got all the arm strength you can ask for. I think they're going to be able to fix him and get him back to the numbers that we've seen quarterbacks produce under Mike Norvell, whether at Florida State, whether at Memphis, whether at Arizona State, wherever he's been in charge, quarterbacks have produced. And so that's, I think they're going to be able to work with him and get him back to those levels.
Yeah.
And again, if they do, I think that's going to really unlock the passing offense for the season.
Yeah. And I'll just say this last thing before we move on is that what matters also too is how you play call, like the plays that you design to put him in a position to be accurate. Like you can have him throwing, you know, on the right hash, throwing an out route on the left side of the field. I mean, that's an NFL type throw. That's a 50-yard throw. So yeah, there's going to be some accuracy issues. You know, there are only a few generational quarterbacks, James Winston and Trevor Lawrence and those guys, and Deshaun Watson, who could have made those throws in college. So yeah, you're going to see accuracy issues with that. So part of this fix, that reason why we're so confident in Mike Norvell being able to get more out of DJU is because the way he play calls, the way he calls plays, he's gonna put DJU in a situation where he's gonna have the most opportunity to throw the most accurate ball. He's gonna call the plays where he has been the most accurate, and in those plays where maybe his accuracy is not as great, he's probably going to move the pocket. You're probably going to see a lot of sprint out. You're probably going to see a lot of rollout to get him where he can get to his side to make a better accurate throw. That's why we think, you know, we're going to see more out of him, because we know that Mike Norvell will put him in a situation to be more successful.
Right, and they'll let him run. So if you have that threat, then obviously you have to play the pass differently on defense.
Right.
So I think they're going to be able to leverage his skill set. And that's something, before we move on, that he did mention at Clemson. He said he didn't feel like they used him the way they should have in that offense. And that's something that I think Mike Norvell can do. And it's easy to tailor the offense this year because you've got so many new pieces.
That's right.
That everybody's kind of learning at the same time. And this is why I love the transfer portal, because you have guys, he's already here for spring. He's going to be here through the summer. He's going to be here in the fall. So you have time to sort this thing out. But you just look at the history. You look at the play calling, like you mentioned. You look at the production numbers that have 12 years of proof that they can get him there. And so, and Tony Tokars is another guy that really deserves a credit for what he's done at the quarterback position at Florida State. I mean, he's an up-and-coming quarterback coach. So I think they're going to be able to get him back, and I think it's going to be big for Florida State if they can. But that's going to be really one of the main things that I'm watching this year, because obviously we saw where Jordan emerged. That took Florida State to wherever they were going. It raised their ceiling, and it took them a lot farther. So I think that's one of the biggest things that we're watching for in spring is, can the most important position on the field be who we expect him to be?
That's right.
It needs to be better than it was.
Yes.
That's the harsh truth of it. Like, I love DJU. I think I love what he brings size, rushing-wise, the experience. It has to get better if Florida State wants to go towards a national title-type run, ACC championship-type run. It's got to get better.
Yeah.
But I think he's in a position that he can get better with this staff and with the roster surrounding him. But I will say this, Michael, you know, you don't have to be Mike Norvell to unlock savings at Alumni Hall FSU.
Oh, come on now.
All you have to do is use code SPEAR to get 10% off new FSU gear at Alumni Hall. They got everything from clothes to gifts, everything that you need. Spring is coming up. You're going to want a new fit for that spring game. And so go check those guys out, 1415 Timberlane Road in Tallahassee, or Alumni Hall online, navigate over to the FSU page, use code SPEAR to get 10% off. So thank you for supporting those that support us, and thank you to them for supporting this show. So the next topic I want to get into, Michael, is players living up to potential and the young and slash depth players stepping up, because there's a lot of undefined roles, undefined spots on the depth chart this year that we're going to need some guys to step up with. And when you look at going from 2021 into 2022, this is why I think this is a very similar year. Again, when I did the preseason magazine in 2022, one of the entire like three keys to successful season for Florida State was potential equals production. You had guys coming in that you thought could be good. You just didn't know if they were going to produce on the field, and all the potential in the world is great, but if it doesn't put up numbers, it doesn't matter. So this year, I feel like you're in the same place. You have a lot of guys that you feel really good about that through high school recruiting, through the portal that you've managed to acquire, that are really talented, but they haven't produced yet on the field. So you need that production to hit. Now, one thing about the staff and the portal is their hit rate has been insane. And we went through and kind of collectively decided here.
I had
to make some adjustments because Michael talked me down off some of these guys. But so in 2021, like Andrew Parchment, we had to give him a half a hit because he did 4th and 14. So like, bro deserves 14. He deserves a half a point for 4th and 14.
That's right. That's
but
right.
Other
That's
than right. that, kind of a bust. But anyway, so getting to it, the numbers, what you're looking at here is 2021, talking about the portal hit rate by Mike Norvell and the staff at Florida State. In 2021, we didn't count 2020 because that was just a shame of a season. Remember now, when you hear these numbers, remember 2021 was an extremely hard sell. You were coming off the back of your third losing season. You had really hadn't cultivated relationships in the state of Florida yet. Things just were, it was a tough time. So in the 2021 class, their hit rate was around 50%. Out of the 11 players that they took. Blue chip ratio, only one out of 11, was 9%. 2022, we saw a massive increase. They had an 85% hit rate in the portal. Now, when I say hit rate, the guys that we talk about, they came in and they filled the role that they were brought in to fill. Not everybody's Keon Coleman. Not everybody is Jared Verse. But you can come in and be a solid rotational player, and that can still be a hit. So that's kind of how we define the terms. The hit rate in 2022 was 85%. The blue chip ratio was 39%. Now look at last year. The hit rate was 92%. That is absolutely insane that they have been so good in the portal. 92% hit rate with a blue chip ratio of 67%. So overall, over their last 3 years, they've had a total portal hit rate of 76%. I don't know that there's a better one in the country. And so if you think that trend, we just talked about how trends and can you revert to the mean? So if you look at what they've done over those 3 years, coming into 2024, they have signed. Now the blue chip ratio is only 67% because they have more transfers than they did in 2023. But you also brought in the highest amount of blue chip players that you brought in at 10 so far throughout their time at Florida State. If you can get a 90% hit rate on these blue chip players, these 15 players that you brought in, you feel like you're going to be in a really good position to have a good season. Of course, there's also some younger guys like you think of a KJ Sampson at defensive tackle. Some of the guys we're talking about, Daniel Lyons, some of these guys at defensive tackle that weren't brought in through the portal. They're high school recruits. They got multiple years on campus. It's time. We need these guys to step into that role now. And that goes for multiple positions. But I just think when you look at their history in the portal, their hit rate, and what they brought in, if they can follow that trend again this year, you'll feel really good about where you're at. But they're going to have to, because so many of these players are going to be relied upon this year that you're going to have that hit rate. But history shows us that we're in a good position to expect that. Yeah. And that's something that we'll get to see in spring a little bit. You won't get to see it in a game. You'll know more in a game, but you'll see the tea leaves come out in practice.
Correct.
Like, oh, this guy's a dude, or maybe he's not what we thought. So
correct.
But that's what we're looking for as far as this goes in spring.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. You'll start to, when you get out, start reading those practice reports or wherever you get your sources for practice from, you'll start hearing about certain guys. You'll hear their names over and over again, and you'll be able to kind of factor in, okay, this person might be a hit. This person sound like a bust. But then again, there are some people that you didn't hear about, you know, in spring that then totally bust onto the scene, you know, during the season. And so it just depends on how seriously they take the spring, how seriously they're trying to grow. I know that the coaches, I would imagine, Jesse, that the coaches are going to be pushing really hard to try to identify, especially along some of those position battles, which we'll get into in just a moment, especially along those position battles to see what players are going to step up, what players are probably not, which then you'll start hearing about potential transfers again, right?
Right.
And so, again, what has been really cool about this coaching staff is that every year, as you've laid out the stats, every year the hit rate is getting better and better and better. I mean, they were already one of the best, like, talent identifiers, evaluators of talent in the country. I mean, this is why Alabama really, really desperately wanted Mike Norvell and then, you know, got Kalen DeBoer, because those two coaches are some of the best portal talent evaluators in the country. It's been everybody saying it. Yeah. Mike Norvell has a keen eye, and this staff has a keen eye of being able to say, to look through the thousands of players in the portal and say, okay, that player, that player, that player, that player. And for, again, I mean, 50, 85, 92% hit rate. I mean, you can't get any better than that. And then adding in the blue chip ratio that's coming into play. So not only are they identifying, you know, diamonds in the rough, so to speak, you know, but they're also being able to take these high caliber football players and getting more out of them. I mean, Keon Coleman from last year, like, he had a great year, you know, great career at Michigan State. But then let's just say he doesn't get injured this year. Oh my gosh, he was already at a high clip. Jaheim Bell was doing much more than what he was doing at South Carolina before his injury. I mean, Johnny Wilson was having a better year before his injury. Trey Benson, I mean, you just keep going over and all throughout the lineup, even on the offensive line, even though the offensive line wasn't as great as they were last year, you saw individual players get better and grow. Right. And so you just only have to imagine that the players that are coming in, yes, they may not be a lot of production. Yes, there are a lot of unknowns about them. But if you trust, like you said, the data, if you trust the data, then the data tells us that that these players that are unknown and don't have many production, they're going to produce, and they're going to produce at a high clip, because this is what the staff has been able to get out of those players.
Right. And when you look back to 2021, I mean, you have to just remember that they were just grabbing bodies at that point.
That's right.
They needed somebody with a
pull. They were desperate
to wear pads and staying on the field. But once they were able to pick and choose, kind of the pick of the litter situation, I mean, 85 and 92% over the last 2 years as a hit rate is absolutely insane. And I think when you talk about the guys that they brought in, there's some that may not develop right away. I mean, keep in mind, Vandravius Jacobs stole the spring. Didn't really do much throughout the season.
That's right.
Hakeem Williams really was kind of a disappointment in the spring, and then came on a little bit during the season, although he battled injury.
That's right.
You know, when you got to see Trey Benson in the spring game, we were okay. I see why they took him now. You know, and Johnny Wilson was like, "Wow, this guy's 6'7" and runs like a deer." So you saw it was spring where we started to see okay, this team is going to be good, you might have some guys that take a minute. I mean, Fentrell Cypress was a guy who started out pretty terrible in spring and then ended up holding down a starting spot throughout the entire year. So this just gives us a first look at whether these guys, and some of the guys they brought in are young, so that doesn't necessarily mean they can't be good next year. They can't be hits down the road.
Right.
But you also, at least this gives you an opportunity to see this guy moves differently. This guy looks like a starter. He can step into this role. And I think that's what you're going to start to see in spring, where they define who are the guys that are ready to contribute right now and who are the guys that maybe need more time.
Yeah. And I don't know if you said this already. I must have blanked out for a second, but I love the way that you describe hit versus bust, which was the idea of, like, when we brought you in, did you accomplish the job that we hoped you would accomplish? Not did you exceed and go get, you know, 1,000 yards, or did not give up any sacks, or 200 tackles and 8 interceptions. Like, did you do the job? Did you hold down the thing? If that is the baseline of what is a hit and a bust, I mean, you can imagine that these players that they brought in to, you know, whatever, the Roydell Williams and the Malik Bensons and the Jaylen Brown, like all those players that we're now bringing in the offensive line. If they just do the baseline, this team is going to be crazy to even say this, far better than the team last year. If they just hit their baseline, if we get injury luck this year, because it seems like every year we're, you know, battling that. If we can have some injury luck this year and every one of those players hits the baseline, which is do the job we brought you in to do. You don't have to go far exceed. You just can't be below it. If you're right at it, this team is going to be better. just period.
Right. And but you got to have the guys do, like you said, they have to come in and fill that role. And if you get, you know, say 85-90% of them do what they're supposed to do, and then 20% of them go above their head, like a Jermaine Correct. Johnson or something Right. like that. Because, I mean, you think about it. When you look back at that, at those seasons, and you talk about potential versus production,
right?
You know, if you hadn't had Jermaine and Kier popping off above their head, it would have been Ooh. Worse than it was. And so, again, that's why I think, like, if you have a couple of these guys, like if you have a Marvin Jones have yeah. a breakout season, if you have, you know, a couple of these receivers, if you have Malik Benson have a breakout season, it's going to be absolutely massive. But if right. you have a bunch of guys that don't live up to the billing, we could start looking at the other end of the spectrum. That's and right. we're hoping that doesn't happen. But that's why this spring is so important. Obviously, they'll have all summer to continue to work out, and the receivers and quarterback can get on the same page. You have fall camp and stuff. So it doesn't have to happen right away. But you'll get a pretty good idea in spring of who's ready to step into that's these right. roles and who's not. And so that's something that we're really going to be watching for. Can they continue that hit rate in the portal? Because here's the other thing. Not only has your hit rate gone up,
right.
but the amount of talent that you brought in, the level of talent of those players have went up. So like that's you right. said, early on, you kind of were doing pretty good, shaking out some diamonds in the rough. You know, you're out there paying them for gold. You found you a few nuggets. Now you're just bringing in gold bars. You just got 10 blue chip players that you brought in. And if you can hit 90% on that, you have to feel extremely good about where yeah. the direction that the season's headed. So,
yeah.
you know, let's hope.
I got this image of Mike Norvell just like Scrooge McDuck, you know, washing his gold bar, like, look right. at this Keon Coleman. Look just at this Malik Benson.
Diving into the room full of gold coins and stuff. Like, and I think that's what's so exciting, man, is this yeah. roster has gotten like talent wise, star yeah. rating wise. And again, we know that Florida State has a big history of playing above their star rankings, that's but right. star rankings do. I mean, it does matter. Like most five stars are usually hits. It's very rare yeah. that they're a bust. It does happen, but you see that blue chip ratio steadily going up. And so if they continue that hit rate, they continue the development, but with more talent, I mean, if they could yeah. get to 13-0 last year yeah. with a sub 50% blue chip ratio, and this year they're going to be at or close to it because we right. don't know what the roster is going to shake out. Some people could leave, some people could stay, and there's another portal session coming up. Man, it just makes your mouth water for what the season can be. Well, like, well, what yeah, can they do with a loaded roster?
Exactly. And here's the thing. I mean, it's just point simple. Diamonds in the rough win you games. Five-star talent wins you championships, right? Right. Like, you can get all the diamonds in the rough you want to, and you'll win some games, and it'll be great and fun. But if you really want to compete for a national championship, you want to compete for an ACC, hopefully future SEC Big Ten championship, you need those talented blue chip players who are going to take you over the edge. You're going to get you over the hill there and win those titles for you. So, yeah, let's get all the diamonds in the rough we want. But, man, let's get those five-star talent and let's develop them so we can win a championship.
Right, right, exactly. So now talking about where some of these talented players are going to shake out at, we're going to talk about five position group battles that we're most heavily watching this spring. Now, there's a lot of quarterback is a battle. Technically, that's one that it's either going to be one of two, and it's right. probably going to be DJU. So that's not really one we're watching. Running back, right. that's going to go by committee regardless because we've yep. seen how they've done it the last 2 years, using two, three, sometimes four backs throughout a game. So we're going to, that's not one that we're really heavily watching because we know they're all going to play. So the first one that we can talk about, we'll start with offense here, is wide receiver. Mm. And that's probably because we have 55 receivers on the roster. Literally half our roster is receivers.
Gosh.
But what's interesting about the receiver room is who's the starters? You don't know.
No position that's like a surefire they're starting.
Right. And like the crazy thing about it is I could probably point to eight guys I like to start.
Yeah.
I don't know how many of those eight I could pick to be the starter because yes. they're all equally exciting, but they all equally haven't produced on the field.
Correct.
So we like where they're at from a talent standpoint, but we're basically wiping the slate clean and starting over. That's of course, right. you have Kentron Portier, Darion Williamson coming back. You know, Destin Hill and Hakeem Williams. Right. You have a lot of guys, but they weren't your starters. They weren't your big time producers. Now, I think the biggest thing to start with is the veterans in the room, who we just mentioned, Portier and Williamson.
Yeah,
those are guys. And I mean, Malik Benson's a veteran, too. He just hasn't been on Florida State's roster for that long. Those two guys, I think, are very viable options. They have size. They've shown you that they can make catches in games. You know, yeah. Darion Williamson comes in, has a 100-yard game against Boston College in 22. Right. You don't see him the rest of the season until the bowl game.
That's right.
You know, Portier comes in, has like a great catch against Georgia, put up basically your only offense of the entire game. Then he leaves with injury. So really for them two, I think one of those two could be in a starting role. They just got to stay healthy. That is the biggest question mark there. And then who do you fill out after that? I obviously have made it known 100,000 times that I am a huge fan of Malik Benson, and I think he is going to be WR1, wide receiver one, as they say. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to step into the starting role. But you also have Jaylen Brown. You also have this. When you look at the slot, you have multiple options there. You have Ja'Kai. You have the Fryer kid that come in as a freshman that they like, that you were telling me beforehand. Yeah. You also have Destin Hill, who was banged up last year and, again, was his first time playing college football in 3 years. So it's not for lack of talent. It's not for lack of pieces. It's just sorting that room out. I mean, we still forget. We kind of lose down the depth chart that you have Deuce Spann.
Yeah.
Deuce Spann, they said last year at, 6'4", 207 pounds, was clocked as the fastest guy on the team last year.
And he was switching from quarterback to wide receiver.
Right. Like, I don't know if that's going to hold up this year, but you just have so many guys like Hakeem Williams and all these guys that we feel like could step in. You have a plethora of targets that could be starter level. But who is going to emerge in that room? Who is going to take that step up? Who is going to be the leader in a group that doesn't really have a leader at the moment? And like what I've heard out of the tour of duty with Malik Benson, you know, being a line leader, being a vocal leader, that's something that I'm watching as well. But man, this is going to be one of the, I think, the most competitive battles because of the level of talent in the room. And so this is one that I'm really watching for spring as wide receiver, because you have so many.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the good thing is whoever doesn't win the position group battle is still friggin' good and can still make it on the field and contribute. But this is a really crowded room with a lot of talent that we're going to be keeping our eye on.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they only got one ball. I don't know how they're going to get that one ball to all those players. You know, so this is why Mike Norvell and Ron Dugans and those guys are paid the big bucks to figure this out. You know, I think, too, I'm really excited about Malik Benson. Like you said, the stuff that you're hearing from the tour duty and how he's taking in a leadership position. I mean, he came from Bama. Obviously, he's got that Bama core in him where, you know, they're hard on him. They grill him. He's got that body. He's ready to go. So I do think he could be, if you're, you know, like I play Madden. So, you know, looking at the X and Y, I think he could be your Y, your RR, your WR1. I also think on the other side, though, your circle, your zero, your WR2 there. I really think, you know, Portier might step up this year if he can stay injury free. Like you said, the key is being able to stay injury free. He's kind of had an injury riddled season, but when he's in there, when he's playing, man, he is electric. He is good. And so I do think that Hakeem Williams is going to factor majorly into this wide receiving rotation this year. He you know, he's come back from injury. His body looks good. He's got good mentals from what we hear and see. You know, you saw it against that in the Syracuse game, I believe it was, when he got the ball. I mean, dude, you did not want to be in front of him. Yeah. And so I really think he could be a big factor. You know, you're going to have Jaylen Lucas. You're going to have Destiny Hill in the slot there. Cameron Fryer guy, I mean, I've heard nothing but electric comments about him. I was telling you in the pre-show that I've heard that he's been compared to a Hunter Renfrow type player, which, I mean, you know, if you've been ACC or you've played Clemson, you've always been like, I really hate this dude, but I wish he was on our team kind of thing. Hey,
well, I'll say it, man. Those little white slot receivers that I think North Carolina had one there for a little bit. Clemson has had one. They kill us, and it's about time that we have one too. So.
Exactly, and so I'm hearing that as well, like just from the reports I'm seeing on social media and stuff. So this is going to be a very fascinating battle of who gets, you know, the starting slot. You know, Mike is gone. Typically, he's always got at least three wide receivers on the field. So, you know, you're going to have that slot receiver. It'll be interesting to see who your one and two and your slots are. But then again, man, they're so interchangeable. That's the beauty about this group. Yeah. Even with we haven't even mentioned Jaylen Brown yet, the LSU transfer. So, you know, they're so interchangeable. You got tall receivers, you got length, you got body mass, you got, you know, catch rate, you got all those things. Now it's about putting it on the field, seeing what the production is of that. And that's gonna be an electric battle this spring.
Right. And you actually just said the next thing that I was gonna comment on is I love the difference. Different skill sets that you have. You have size. You have a bunch of guys that are over 6 foot tall. You got a couple that's 6'3", 6'4". You have some bigger bodies that, that can go up and get the ball, that can kind of box DBs out. You have some little guys who can kind of work in space that I really like. Yeah. So you have a lot. And of course, it all depends on who stays in the boat after spring, because you could lose a few. But you just feel good. Like, if you were to sub out Portier for Hakeem, you feel like you're not missing a step. If you had to put in Jaylen Brown for Malik Benson, you feel like you have another good target there. And I think last year, one of the problems was from your ones to your twos, you just kind of weren't, you had a little bit of a step down there, and that was a little bit of concern. Now, at the same time, I just talked about how we threw for the most yards when we were with our backup. But on a consistent basis, you just you didn't really have a consistent set of twos. And so now I think this year you're going to have a consistent set of ones, twos, threes, and there's a lot to watch for. So this one's going to be interesting. Now, the next position group battle that we're watching is, let's go switch over to defense for a second. This is at the safety position. Mm. This is an interesting one because you're really only fighting for one spot. Now, we feel pretty confident that Shaheem Brown is going to hold down one of the safety spots. And he did really good last year. He's become an experienced player. He's a leader of the defense now. And so I like what Shaheem brings to the safety position. He was my breakout player last year. So he did well. So you feel pretty good about there. Now, the other safety spot could be one of five guys. You're just kind of tossing it in the air. I mean, of course, you got Akeem Dent, you got to replace.
Yeah.
We saw Conrad Hussey play last year, who flashed in very limited action, but he's still young. He's only a true sophomore. This is my dark horse pick for the season. I kind of like him to maybe step into that starting role. But you also have Kevin Knowles, who, you know, he had a pretty up and down year last year at the safety position. A lot of it, like we discussed in a previous episode, was with his tackling.
That's right.
But it was his first year at safety, so now he has 2 years there as well. So he's a guy that's going to be battling for that position. You also have KJ Kirkland, who's a massive body type, 6'1", 197, a redshirt freshman, now has a year in the system. Ashlyn Barker was a JUCO transfer that they really like. Another guy was incredible size, 6'3", 206 for a safety. And then you have Devontae Brown, who comes in from Miami. I know they kind of got a lot of flack about taking him, but he was actually really good at UCF, and he's another spot you have at the safety. So you have so many guys to choose from. Who is going to emerge as that number two safety? Now, we were actually talking about this, too, with the corner position. You feel good about Fentrell Cypress. You feel good about Azaria Thomas.
Yeah.
And then you like a lot of the young guys that you have behind it. But you know, once you look at the roster, you're a little bit thinner at corner than you thought you were, unless you're talking about turning to some younger, unproven guys. So if you're this deep at safety, in a sense, and I don't want to say deep because you don't feel great about all the options.
Right.
You know, maybe Kevin Knowles could go back to corner or something like that to give you some depth there. But just watching the safety position, man, I think it's going to be interesting to see who develops, because you have Kevin Knowles, who is the most veteran on the team at that position.
Outside of Brown,
right, on Florida State's roster, who has played at Florida State, familiar with the defense and all that stuff. To me, you have Conrad Hussey, who's the most talented. He has the highest ceiling. This guy was a four-star coming out of high school, big-time get for Florida State. I'm sure is going to be a starter at least this year or next year.
Yep.
And then you all, like, don't count out Devontae Brown. The guy's played a lot of football. Yes. And it's just, you know, I mean, he didn't have a good year at Miami, but he had good years at UCF, but it's Miami. So
it's Miami.
You know, I don't know how many people have a good, I mean, look at what we think Daryl Jackson's going to do coming from Miami to Florida State. So and KJ Kirkland, again, is another guy that's made noise during the tour duty workout. So this is an interesting position group battle that we're going to be watching at safety. So I'll let you share some thoughts on what's going to happen with the safety position, other than Shaheem Brown hopefully locking down a spot. And I will say this too, you feel good about safety with Shaheem Brown, but remember, Akeem Dent missed a few games last year. You want to develop at least 3 to 4 guys in case that situation happens again. Correct. Because last year when Akeem Dent went out, you ran into trouble quick.
You did. You really did, and you saw where that depth issue came into play. So, yeah, you feel great about Shaheem Brown. You think he'll make another jump this year, his third season. He played significant snaps his first season in 2022, played well for the most part in 2023, and you think he'll make that jump in the 2024 season. Where they go there, man, this is like the wide receiver all over again.
Yeah.
This is as much of a mystery as anything, because like you said, Hussey has the highest ceiling probably of all of them right now. And so do you go with him? Do you play talent over experience? Because if you're going to experience, then you're going to put Kevin Knowles there, right? I mean, that's just the easier thing. But again, you already mentioned this, and we talked about this in the preseason, in the pre-show, is that, man, since you feel a little bit thin at corner, do you put Kevin Knowles back at what was his natural position, which he played much better than he did at safety, which is the corner position? So if you put him there, now you're looking at, you know, KJ Kirkland and Devontae Brown. And I'm with you on this Devontae Brown kid. I know we got a whole bunch of flack. People are making fun of us for taking, or making fun of FSU for taking Devontae Brown. But like you said, listen, who thrives outside of Restrepo? Who thrives at Miami, right?
Right. Who does? Look at their two safeties last year. Cam Kitchens really regressed.
Yeah.
I mean, he really did. Regressed. So
absolutely. So who thrives? So he might get here, and let's just go ahead and say what it is. I mean, like, Patrick Surtain is a much better DB coach than whoever's coaching at Miami. And so he'll get that development, and who knows, he might turn out to be like the diamond in a rough again that we didn't see and could find. And so I really think, though, If I'm Patrick Surtain, if I'm Adam Fuller, man, I really like this idea of moving Kevin Knowles back to the DB spot to give you more depth there. I know they got Earl Little, I know they got that, but man, you just want to make sure you have that sewn up. And I'm looking at Hussey and Devontae Brown and KJ Kirkland and say, okay, which one of you can be the safety one, and then which one of you can develop so you can back up if either one gets injured, and then and then go from there. That's kind of what I would be looking at. But you know, these coaches make big bucks. They're smarter than I am.
Right, exactly. Me too. But they make, I mean, again, you trust the staff and their decisions. You just want to see who's going to emerge as the possible other starter, and then who's going to emerge as some depth players that would be quality depth, which is what you need in case you lose somebody.
That's right.
Now, the next one that we're going to talk about is offensive line. And this is one that, you know, I think early on, I really didn't think this was a position group battle to watch. But then we started counting earlier, and we have 17 offensive linemen on the roster. Jeez. Now, only a little handful of them were freshmen. So those guys you expect to be okay with not contributing. There's a couple of upperclassmen that, you know, maybe you look at their transfer portal candidates. If they just don't, like Bryson Estes is a guy that I brought up in a pre-show where, you know, he's been around the program for a while. I think he's a redshirt junior. And he's a guy that hasn't found his way on the field yet. So does he transfer out? Does he just kind of stay in that role as a career backup? We'll have to wait and see. But you have 17 guys to choose from.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you bring back a lot of your starters from last year, a lot of your core starters, but you also add two really good transfers that so far through tour of duty have been the ones that stood out the most.
That's right.
In Richie Leonard and the Ferguson kid, the TJ Ferguson from Alabama. So if you pencil in those two guys as very likely potential starters, then where does everybody else go? Because of course you have Darius Washington, who can pretty much play everywhere.
Anywhere. Yep.
Who's going to be your backup center, which I know they've talked a little bit about a couple guys working there. You know, who's going to be your tackles? It's year three on campus for Julian Armella. When is that recruitment going to play out? I mean, this is a guy that we were extremely excited about that just hasn't found his way onto the field yet. You also have the Lucas kid who's
that's right.
Probably your highest ceiling lineman just from his build. He's built like an NFL offensive tackle.
Yeah.
He's only in year two, and he's got some veterans in front of him, so it may be another year for him. But that's another guy that could certainly be fighting for a starting position. So, I mean, you have a lot of guys that you feel really good about. And I think the best thing about this is you finally will have 7 to 8 guys, maybe 9 guys that you feel confident rolling with. And last year, we know this offensive line was extremely beat up throughout the season.
Yeah.
And so it's good to have the depth, but who's going to end up emerging as the starters? And I mean, obviously, you know, just talking about a guy like Robert Scott Jr., he was a guy that you had penciled in as a starter due to injuries, barely even played last year, but now he comes back again for another year. So it's going to be interesting to watch, man. There's a lot of positions where you could see one guy beating out the other, and some of the guys who maybe starters that are coming back that might not be promised to have a starting job. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how this one plays out.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how I feel about this, Jesse. Like, I get it with the defensive linemen, the linebackers, and the, you know, the DBs, even your wide receivers, your running back. You know, I get it. Like the rotation and stuff like that. offensive line last year, I know even before the injury bug started really catching on, they were rotating linemen. You know, I don't know if this is the way football is going, where, you know, certain plays, certain play calls, certain play dynamics, you want this offensive lineman in, that offensive lineman in. I remember Alex Atkins saying in the springtime and coming into preseason camp, like, oh, we got 8 guys that we can run with and we can rotate them out. I'm like, what happened to the days where you wanted your solid 5 and those are the guys that were going to run block, pass block, and do all that for you? You know, I'd love it this year if they could do that. If they could get 5 solid guys, like, these are the guys. And then, yes, we have 5. We have 5 guys or maybe 3 guys after those solid 5 that are good enough. There's just like a bit missing there.
Right.
But, yeah, if we put them in there, they'd be fine. But I want 5, you know, hog mogs, pass blocking, run you over, beat you up. They mean mugging you, right? Like, you know, the Dillon Givens, you know, I miss the Brian Stork days, like, you know, big old beard and just, rah, you know, just get you. That's what I want us to develop. And again, you know, we thought Robert Scott going into the season, okay, that's going to be our tackle. He's going to hold it down. It's going to be great. And then, yeah, he barely played. They saved him for most of the year. He'd come in for a couple snaps and you wouldn't see him again. You know, you got Maurice Smith back, who played banged up the entire year. I mean, the Louisville game was like his Herculean effort, his Michael Jordan flu game. I mean, the dude could barely walk, but he played. You have Jeremiah Byers coming back. You got Keandre Jones coming back. And then, of course, the Swiss Army knife, Darius Washington. So those are 5 right there. Now, are those your starters? Don't know. Because you have TJ Ferguson from Alabama. I mean, you look at him and you're like,
he looks like an Alabama offensive lineman.
Jeez Louise. And so you can't knock that. You got Richie Leonard from Florida, who was their best offensive lineman coming over. So, like, you got to look at that. So that position battle is going to be interesting as well, too. Dare I say, Jesse, some of these guys that you love and have been here for a bit got recruited over?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, the thing with offensive line is the hit rate with offensive line tends to be lower because you just don't know how they're going to project and how they're going to develop. So you really just have to take as many as you can and let the cream rise to the top, and then the rest of them just figure it out. But I do think your floor is getting a little higher this year. I think last year, I really shout out to Dillon Givens. Like, he was one of my favorite offensive linemen. I will never forget when he came off the field. I think it was the Florida game, and his face mask was literally sideways from hitting dudes so hard. And it's like, I love that. But I think last year, like we mentioned, through health and not having Robert Scott most of the year, having guys like Maurice playing through injury, you took a step back. We know that.
Yeah.
I think this year you feel better about the floor being a little bit higher, and you just got to figure out who's going to be the starting 5. Because again, like you mentioned with offensive line, it's a very continuity heavy position group.
Yeah.
But one thing I will say that I like, just looking at the roster real quick, man, we have some size. I mean, Robert Scott, 6'5", 313, Maurice Smith, he's pushing 300 pounds, but you also have Jeremiah Byers, 6'4", 325. You have Richie Leonard, 6'2", 320. You have TJ Ferguson, 6'4", 320. Armella, 6'6", 320. DeAndre Jones, 6'3", 332. You got Darius Washington, 6'4", 306. So you have a ton of size. And, I mean, Lucas Simmons, this is why I'm excited for this guy to get on the field. 6'8", 313 pounds, jeez, long arms, long legs, built like an offensive tackle, just a redshirt freshman. So the pieces, I think it's like wide receiver and all these other ones, the pieces are there. You're getting more excited about the clay that you have to work with. It's just who's going to emerge as the starters. But again, competition breeds excellence. So the fact that you have 8 guys vying for that 5 spots, I think that's going to create the best starting 5 that you have. And then it's just going to be about having them stay healthy throughout the season.
Right.
Now, the next position group that we're going to talk about, this is one where you lost some of you lost Jared Verse, and this is defensive end. You feel good about Patrick Payton. You figure he's probably got one of those starting spots locked down. I mean, the guy is the leader of the defensive line.
Right.
He is a veteran player now. But then you got a handful of guys outside of that you don't really know how they're going to shake out, but you love all of them. And I feel like the most exciting thing about this entire episode is the narrative that we keep hitting in every position group is you love who you have. You just need to see it translate to the field.
That's right.
So, like,
we
love who we have. You're getting better. But looking at that defensive end role, I mean, you have Patrick Payton, who we feel, again, is locked down that one side. Then you have Marvin Jones Jr., who kind of has that similar body type to him.
That's right.
Is he going to start up? Because he's probably your high ceiling guy, 5-star coming out of high school, all this stuff. Is he going to step into that other starting role opposite of Patrick Payton?
Right.
Or is he going to be a really solid 1-2 punch
right,
with Patrick Payton as they rotate out. And then you move some of your heavier guys over to the other side to be that kind of bigger Jared Verse, push him around type of defensive right. end, that run stopper type of guy with Sione Loleha. At 6'3", 270, you got the Durajaya kid at 6'4", 280. You have Jaden Jones, someone that a lot of people forget about, has been coming off injury, JUCO transfer, 6'5", 252. Lamont Green Jr. still got to put some weight on, only 223 pounds right now, coming off injury last year. But Byron Turner Jr., another guy that played significant snaps for you last year. So you have a plethora of guys that you like, but you only really have one starter penciled in. So I think it's figuring out who's going to be that opposite starter. You know, I like the Sione guy because he's a two-time all-conference player. He's extremely experienced. I think that Durajaya would be good behind him because he's a more of a raw talent who has all the physical tools you would want in the world. I mean, the guy is a beast. He just needs to be refined a little bit.
Right.
So I think he's a good two-punch off the bench. Now, Byron Turner Jr., this is a guy who became a contributor last year.
That's right.
Is he one that maybe looks for the door if he doesn't, if he gets bumped down the depth chart? Maybe not. But the good thing is, we were talking about this earlier, at the defensive end position, last year you felt really good about 1 and 2. You had one of the most elite defensive end pairings in college football. The twos were okay. You had Byron Turner, and then you had Gilbert Edmond, who is gone now back to South Carolina. So you kind of felt okay about that. Man, 2024, I legit love the three deep. I mean, the top six defensive ends. Now, 5 and 6, maybe those are not pressure situation guys, but I think like really 1 to 2 and 3 and 4 are very high level players. And then I think we have six legit defensive ends if nobody transfers out that are battling for a position here.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. You're so right on that. Like, you know, you had Jared Verse, you had Patrick Payton. They're like the penthouse of DE linemen, right? And then when you brought in, you know, Byron Turner and Gilbert Everett, and not that they were bad players, but they were kind of like the break room, you know, players. Like, you know, they're not your higher suite. And so that drop-off level was significant. I mean, there were many times that FSU fans were like, man, you notice when the offense was moving the ball more was when they were in, right? Yeah. Because they were trying to get them reps. They were trying to get them significant game reps and significant moments, which I totally understood that. But now you feel like, okay, if, you know, Patrick Payton, whoever else is on the other side is out and they're rotating in, you feel like right now, we're at spring here, pre-spring. You feel like at pre-spring that level is not going to be so significant like it was last season, that, you know, you're going to drop a level depending on who it is, but it's not going to be as bad as you want or as bad as you're not hoping for. And I do like Loleha. I think he could be a dynamic person that you're bringing in. Twitch, got great twitch, you know, can get around, a little bit smaller, but like still has that ability to get to the passer, to get inside the lane there, make sure he clogged it up. I think MJ Jr., I think he's, I mean, gosh, I'm hoping for his dad part two. Like, and I don't think you got to see that as much as at Georgia. Honestly, to me, I think he realized he made a mistake. He should have never went to Georgia in the first place. Should have came here. He would have been far more developed, far more a star. And he had to sit around. He had to sit behind people, and then he didn't get as much developed. I think you're going to see that come alive here. And what's cool about him is that he's not just a DE. He's not just a defensive end. He actually has the size and ability that if you wanted to, if Adam Fuller and John Papuchis decided to, they could actually pull him out a little bit and have him cover around that 5 to 10 yard range there. It doesn't have to be, you know, anything significant, just like be a space eater, really.
Right.
And so that's like the hybridness of MJ Jr. that I get excited for. And then, I think Durajaya, I think you're going to see Byron Turner, well, this is you know they say in the NFL, when it's your contract year, it's a show me year, right? Well, this is a show me for Byron Turner, because you're right. I hate to say it, I do think he's a transfer portal candidate if the spring doesn't turn out how he's hoping for. I think everybody else, I think you're just kind of still testing out. Don't forget, we still got Aaron Hester, who, you know, was thought of to be a potential contributor coming out of the high school ranks and just hasn't really been able to show that. He's still got to grow a little bit, but we'll see kind of how that develops.
Yeah. And I like what you talk about with MJ Jr. I mean, this is at Georgia. He played a lot of stand up linebacker.
Yep.
Yeah, he played and he was banged up too, so that hurt his development a little bit. I think now he's going to get back to playing more of his true position, but he does give you that versatility. And he has mentioned before that him and Storms are going to try to get him up to around 260 or so, 270 before the season starts. So, I mean, if he translates into what his potential was coming out of high school, that, you know, consensus five-star who has all the tools and the bloodline.
Right.
I mean, that's going to be a guy that you think is an immediate starter.
That's right.
And could be a star status. That could be a Jermaine Johnson 2.0 right there. And you feel amazing having, like, the fact that you could have a Jermaine Johnson 2.0 and you really are not sure how you're going to get him on the field quite yet. Is he going to be able to jump this guy or not? That's extremely exciting at the defensive end position.
Yeah.
You know, again, Sione Loleha, this is a guy that comes in that you want to see. Can they bring him, can they elevate him a little bit more? Just like the DJU thing we talked about. You know what he is. You know his floor. But can you elevate that ceiling just a little bit more to get a little bit more out of him? Yep. Durajai, that's a man child. Like, can they refine? You know, it's like a bull in the china shop. Can they refine his skill set enough to make him a really effective defensive end? But I like all the pieces that you have.
Yeah.
And I think it's just right now it's going to be finding out in the spring anyway, finding out kind of who steps into that other starting role and kind of the body types you have and how they use them to fill out your depth chart there. And then, of course, after the spring, who stays and who doesn't?
Yeah.
You know, but I love the depth that you have, and I love the competition and the level of athletes that you have in the room. Because like we talked about, even with defensive tackle, you lock in your top two.
Oh, yeah.
And then
then
you have a few question marks afterwards here. I think with defensive end, your top three rotations, you're pretty much locked in. You're good to go. And we know they like to rotate. That's something that you mentioned earlier where Mike Norvell said, I basically went back and looked at all the championship level teams over the past few years, how they use their defensive linemen. And so it might be a little tougher to do on the defensive tackle position. I personally would like to see them get another D tackle out of the portal. But I think at defensive end, I think you feel good about being able to rotate any one of these top six guys and get significant production out of them.
Yeah, for sure. And the thing is, iron sharpens iron, right? Iron sharpens iron. So these guys, they're going to compete and they're going to be in their face. They're going to do all they can. And that's what we need. That's the thing about this offseason spring that I'm really excited for, Jesse, is the fact that not only do we have talent, but we have a lot of talent, which means that talent's going to push each other, which means it's going to bring out the best of you. And if it doesn't bring out the best of you, then you shouldn't have been here in the first place. Right.
Right.
And so that's what that along all of these positions, but especially on this defensive line, man, you're going to see the best of the best. You're going to see them really push and challenge each other for those starting spots, even though knowing that, as long as you're on the two deep, you're going to get a chance to play because you're going to get rotated in.
Right.
But man, you want the significant snaps. You don't want just like any old meaningless snap. You want snaps when the game is on the line, because that's what the NFL film is watching.
Right.
They're watching when the game is on the line. Are you able to make a play? Are you able to dominate the person in front of you? And so that talent is going to be able to push each other to get there. And that's what I'm excited for, to see this spring, to see the competition come out, man. This is old Florida State football where you had talent up. Talent on talent, and they're just beating each other up because they're trying to start. They're trying to play.
Right. You have guys that would have easily started on the 2020, 2021, 2022 team that may be rotational players now. And even if you think about last year, you didn't really have anybody pushing Jared Verse and Patrick Payton. But, I mean, obviously you didn't need anybody to push them because they were already really good. So the last position group battle that we're going to be watching that we're going to talk about today is at linebacker. Now, this is one that you kind of got to flip the page a little bit and talk about in a different light here. This is one where you don't exactly love everything that you have at the position. It's not that you don't love it. You're just very unsure about what you're going to get from it more than anything. And I think with the linebacker, the conversation becomes, obviously, it was looking at the pieces that you have, it was big to get DJ Lundy back. I mean, knowing that you didn't really do a lot. You haven't really done a lot in high school, and the portal, you only really brought in one guy, whereas you had targeted a few. You missed out on the Cam Riley kid and all that stuff. But you feel like DJ Lundy's got that spot locked down. Now, DJ Lundy was great against the run. I think he was Pro Football Focus's highest graded linebacker against the run the entire season last year. He's a physical specimen for a football player. He looks the part. He can take a step forward for sure. That's not to say that he can't get better. I think this is kind of like when we talk about with safety. You know, you have one guy that you hang your hat on, but then who's next? because when you look at the linebackers, okay, so you bring in Sean Murphy from Alabama. This is a guy that obviously he got recruited by Alabama, so
that's right.
The clay is good. But he hasn't played a whole lot. I mean, he hasn't. 6'2", 225. He's got the size, you know, exactly what you want in a linebacker. You just haven't seen it on the field yet. Blake Nicholson, this is another guy, extremely good clay, high ceiling. We've seen him play a little bit at Florida State. He had some moments where he flashed. He had some moments where he looked like a freshman.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have a lot of experience. So can he find a way to get – and he's 6'3", 215 listed on the roster. So you maybe want to see him get a little bit of mass added there, but maybe he's more of like a cover linebacker. And then you also have Justin Cryer, a guy that came in, transferred in from Northwestern, first year on campus last year, didn't really contribute a whole lot, but is a guy that has been talked about as being a significant contributor this year. Then you also throw into that mix Omar Graham Jr., a guy that we've been kind of waiting to turn into something. We've heard some good and some bad, kind of some mixed reviews there. That kind of gets to be about it. I mean, you have DeMarco Ward, who's a redshirt freshman, and you have Tamir Hickman-Collins, who's a true freshman in there. You have a couple other guys. The talent level drops off after you get past the first four that we talked about. And I think it's going to be DJ Lundy, but then you're going to have Sean Murphy, Blake Nicholson, Omar Graham Jr., and Justin Cryer fighting for that second and third spot, because we know they run a 4-2-5 most of the time. So you really only need to get two good linebackers and a couple of rotational pieces. But if you go to a 4-3, you need to define that third guy. And so this is one where maybe the cupboard is not as overflowing as the defensive end position, but you have some pieces that can be productive for you. It's just how are they going to shake out on the depth chart? And I'm assuming we probably hope that it goes DJ Lundy, Sean Murphy, Blake Nicholson, Justin Cryer, then Omar Graham Jr., because that's just from a talent perspective, those are your top three guys from Lundy, Murphy, and Nicholson. But again, you got to see it play out in practice. And that's that's one thing that we're really going to be watching for in the spring, because you lose a guy like Tatum Bethune, who maybe doesn't project as a high-quality NFL linebacker, but he was a great linebacker. 100-plus tackler at UCF, transferred in, was great for you at linebacker. Kalen DeLoach really had a strong season his senior year. You know, we talked about this before the show. Personally, I would like to see them get another linebacker who could be you don't have to be exceptional, but just find me another Tatum Bethune, a guy who was productive at the college level. But this is by far, I think, your biggest position group of concern for 2024, period. And it's just who is going to be that next guy to step up, because you have a lot of unknown at this position.
Yeah, this one was for me the biggest one. I mean, wide receiver, like I'm excited. I think all the other position group battles that we've talked about today are exciting battles. This one is nerve-wracking, because it's like, and we pride ourselves on being a fair show, a fair organization. And so, you know, we're not going to throw coaches and anybody under the bus here. But to say the least, linebacker play, not last season, but linebacker recruiting, let's go with that, has been subpar, right?
Yeah.
And so, again, here we are going into the season with massive question marks about who our linebackers are going to be, how they're going to step up. And yes, I absolutely agree with you. Guys, we got to go to the portal and get another one. We need another one. We were saying before the pre-show, we were kind of joking, but we were basically like 99.9% serious. Yeah. Like, let's just go find one of those linebackers from, you know, a Power 5 program that's, you know, that's in the portal, that has like 100 tackles. They're consistent. They may not be the greatest linebacker, but they've got proof in the pudding production. They're going to be right where they need to be. They're going to stuff the run. They're going to cover okay. That's what we need. We just need one more that can just – you just feel good. Like, okay, this player is going to do their job, right? Because, again, DJ Lundy, great – I mean, you know, great size, all that stuff. Question marks as a linebacker. Omar Graham, he had some flashes, had some bad flashes. Blake Nicholson had some good flashes, had some bad flashes. Sean Murphy, we don't know much about him. You know, he was at Alabama, so he got recruited. We got recruited over too. Justin Cryer, who has a lot of potential and still don't know much about. And so you just want a serviceable linebacker. I mean, yes, the predominant defensive alignment that they play in is that 4-2-5. And so two linebackers at most are going to be on the field at times. Sometimes they switch into that 4-3. Now, if they switch into that 4-3, we kind of talked about this a little bit, that, you know, if MJ Jr. is in the lineup there, you do have the ability, though it's not his natural position, to leverage him in some cases. Not all cases. Right. In some cases. So we need... Again, we need another linebacker here. This is probably the position group, Jesse, I'm going to be watching the most, because I'm just trying to figure out who's going to be those two serviceable linebackers who they don't have to be superstars. They just can't hurt the defense. They can't just be letting running backs run all over them and letting, you know, tight ends run free in the middle of the field. That's what we're looking for.
Right. You don't need Dick Butkus back there, but you or Brian Urlacher or something like that. But you need some guy. And I don't want to pick on anybody, so I won't say any names for the other end of the spectrum. But I think really what you're looking for out of spring is you're looking for that number two guy to step up, no matter who it is.
Right.
I think, you know, if Sean Murphy can turn out to be who you think he is, why they brought him in. And again, we just talked about how the staff has a great ability to identify talent and develop them. I think if he can step up, you feel eminently better about this position group.
Yep.
I think if you just hear that Blake Nicholson is developing and some of these other guys are starting to get where they can be in that contributing role, you would feel better about the position. But I'm with you, man. I think like one more college-ready, step on the field, ready-to-go type of linebacker from the portal that has played, that has experience, I think would really severely benefit this room. But it's still going to be a question mark going into the season. I mean, they've got some guys that you like, but none of them are really, really high level players.
That's right.
And I mean, we've talked about it before. In a 4-2-5 defense, if you had to kind of pick one weakness, it would be linebacker. But great linebacker play can take your defense to that next level.
Yes.
And, you know, again, you like what you get out of DJ Lundy. Being fair, there's a reason he didn't start last year.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, you need him to take a step up.
Yes, you do.
And then you need Sean Murphy to emerge, and then you need the guys. You just want to hear positives about the linebacker more than anything. Yes. I think you just want to hear positives. You know, you didn't really hear a whole lot out of the tour of duty from the linebacker room. Just kind of crickets over there. So this is one that we're going to be keeping our eye on, more from a little bit of a different aspect than the other ones we mentioned, where, you know, you're so excited about all the pieces that you got that you can't wait to see who makes it on the field. This is the one where, like, you just want to see the pieces that you got turn into guys who can be on the field.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that's really going to be the main thing that we're watching out of that linebacker room. But those are five position groups that we're going to be keeping a close eye on. Of course, obviously, you're going to watch everybody. You want to see how everybody develops. You want to, like, I'm excited to see this running back room. I'm excited to see the quarterbacks battle it out. Yeah. I can't wait to see a lot of these. I hope to see Landon Thomas.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping to see Jackson West at tight end make some noise in the spring. These are things that you want to see. But these are the five position groups that we feel are kind of crucial battles that are going to have to play out, not so much do like a position by committee type of deal. So I'm excited, man. Spring gets underway in just a couple of days. Next week on Tuesday, we're going to be watching. Obviously, it's not open to everybody, so we'll have to kind of read practice reports and the film that we get to watch. Of course, it all culminates in the spring game on April 20th, where you kind of get to see everybody in person for once. And so, man, I'm just really excited about spring. I think this is the time where you find out what this roster's got, how they look in pads. You know, tour duties, well, it's not fun for them, but it's fun for us. It's fun for us to watch and talk about. But you really never know what you have in a guy until you can thump in pads and stuff like that. So it's going to be interesting to see coming up real soon. We'll get to look at this 2024 roster, which we are very excited about.
Yes.
It's how it develops. Can it be what we think it can be? And that's what we're going to get our first look at in spring. So we'll be watching for that. So, yeah, man, I'm just really excited for the spring session coming up. And I don't know if you have any final thoughts before we wrap this episode up.
Yeah, man. You know, like on paper, this looks like it could be another contender. But let's get it from the paper to the practice field to the game. That's how this process goes. And so, yeah, man, spring, we are excited. Like these five position groups we're watching, we're excited for every position group, right? As you said, to see how they all develop. But these are the five that are going to make a difference. These are the five that tells you whether or not you're a contender for an ACC champion to the potential ACC champion and contender for a national champion to a like actual contender for a national championship. And so having our eyes on this to see what the unknown paper talent looks like to see if it can actually develop into productive talent. That's going to be really key for this Florida State group this year. Jesse, I'm really excited to see how it comes out. And then also too, the second part of what comes out of the spring is you get the tea leaves. Okay, this person's probably transferring.
Yep.
You get to probably start hearing about other programs. I'm going to keep an eye. There's some programs out there that I'm going to keep an eye. There's certain players out there that I think might also be potential transfer portal candidates that Florida State might have interest in. Linebackers and defensive linemen, another, and maybe another DB too. So about there's like three position groups that I think Florida State could go in the portal and add, because they're, let's be real, they're going to lose some. It's inevitable. They're going to lose some players this season and to the spring transfer portal window. So who do they bring in? We're going to be able to kind of get at least where the wind's blowing with some of that out of the spring. So excited for it. Can't wait. Let's go Tuesday.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Not only does the spring start to show you if the cards you got are the winning hand, because we feel really good about this roster, but we haven't seen them do it on a field yet. So now you get the feel for that. You also get the feel for maybe we need to look in the portal for a player. Maybe we're going to lose a player to the portal. So this is where things start to get interesting in spring. So I'm excited for it. Like we said, starts off next week. But that's going to do it for us today, guys. This has been our spring preview and the things that we are watching for. Of course, check back in as we have developments. We will obviously keep you guys updated on spring developments. Who's rising to the top? Who's maybe falling into the shadows? Make sure you check out Alumni Hall FSU to get some new FSU gear and use code SPEAR to get 10% off your order. And as always, guys, thank you so much for tuning in, and go Noles.
Go Noles.